things you have. Lord, thank you for what you've already done in this retreat. Thank you for the blessings you've already given and just the way you've touched our lives. We ask that in these workshops, this time, that Lord, you would touch each and every one in just a personal way and give them the word that you have for them. Lord, pray that you would strengthen me. Lord, your power will be here. Lord, you just give me the words to say. This workshop up to you, and thank you, Jesus. Right. Well, I was going to make the big announcement now, but guess what? We said it last night. So that's okay. For those of you who don't attend Calvary Chapel La Mirada, my husband is Pastor Bernal. He's an assistant pastor at the church. And it was only just last month that we found out we were pregnant. And that's exciting enough. It is very exciting. We love that. But if you guys knew the journey that I took to get to this point, the journey both of us have taken, you would be so much more excited for us. And so that's what I want to share with you today. And just how perfect and how wonderful and amazing this time in our life, God's time is to give us this child. So, you know, there's a couple stories in the Bible of people who had closed wombs and who desired to have a child. One of those is Hannah. And I wish I could tell you guys that I was just like Hannah. That I was on my knees every year crying out and asking the Lord for a child. That was crying so much that somebody thought I was drunk. But that wasn't me. But just to look at this and to explain Hannah's situation. For those of you that don't know, Hannah was the mother of the prophet Samuel. She wanted a child so badly because in that culture, it was a disgrace to not have a child. That was a woman's role. That's what she did. If you didn't have a child, you were nobody. So it was very disgraceful. Her story is in 1 Samuel, so let's go ahead and turn there a little bit. I want to give you a contrast of a couple different reactions to people who have waited for a child. In 1 Samuel, it tells us that the Lord had actually closed Hannah's womb. And later, in verse 6, in chapter 1, in verse 6, it tells us that not only did she have to endure the disgrace and not have a child, but she had to endure her husband's other wife and who had her and who provoked her, who irritated her, who picked on her, and constantly wrote this up. She had to endure persecution from within her own family. But let's look at verse 10. It says, in bitterness of soul, Hannah wept much and prayed to the Lord. That is the kind of prayer you expect for somebody who's been waiting for 11 years or even longer for a child. And again, I wish I could say that, but in verse 12, it tells us she was praying even silently. I mean, she was so hurt in her soul that she was... have you guys ever prayed and you just... The words didn't come out. You were praying, but there's just no words there. It tells us in the New Testament that he translates those prayers. But that's what Hannah was doing. And Eli, the high priest, saw it. And like I said, he thought that she was drunk. And actually condemned her for it. But once she explained it, he said, well, may the Lord give you whatever you ask. I don't know if that was word from the Lord or if that was just him trying to cover his tracks. Either way, the Lord did answer her prayer. I really wish that I were a Hannah, but I wanted to share that just to share just a different perspective. But instead, my story is a lot more like Sarah. Let's go to Genesis 16. Okay, in Genesis, God had called Abraham and told him the story that you all know, that he would give him a land, that he would prosper him, be a father of many nations, that he would give him a son. Well, that didn't happen for a long time. And Sarah never got pregnant, her womb was closed. And so, in chapter 16, Sarah took matters into her own hands. Now Sarai, Abraham's wife, had borne him no children, and she had an Egyptian maidservant named Hagar. So she said to Abram, "The Lord has kept me from having children. Go sleep with my maidservant. Perhaps I can build a family from her." Okay, don't freak out. I didn't offer my husband another woman. But I guess what I want to say is what Sarah did is took matters in her own hands. She didn't seek the Lord. You don't see her going, "Lord, I don't know what to do. I'm going to do this. You know, is that okay with you?" You don't see any of that. She just said, "You know what? I'm going to fix this. I know that God promised my husband a son. Maybe it wasn't going to be mine." And gave and tried to fix it. And that's kind of what I did. Again, not giving another one, but I tried to take my own life in my own hands and do my own time, my own plans. Because that never ends well. It never goes well at all. I'm a small town girl. I grew up in Colorado in a small town in the middle of the Rocky Mountains. Actually, not even in town. It's 7 miles outside of town. I was raised in the church. I guess you would say I was highly sheltered. I feel like I've known the Lord my entire life. And that's not to say that I don't know that I'm saved. It just means I don't. It just feels like I've always been saved. After I finished high school, I decided to go off to California to go to college, which was a huge move for me. And I attended Biola University. I had my future all planned out on what I was going to do. I had my major. Most people don't go into college with majoring and everything figured out. I had it all. I had my life just figured out where I was going to go. But up to this point, I'd never really dated anyone. I wasn't the most popular girl in high school. And so I never, marriage and family, that sort of thing, wasn't really in my mind. But during my second semester at Biola, I met this man. And I can tell you, he swept me off my feet. He was just everything I thought I ever wanted. He was older than me. I don't remember how much older. I'm thinking like 10 years. But he was smart. He was very strong-willed, very much stood up for what he believed in. He also attended Biola. He wanted to be a pastor. And he was so romantic. He bought me flowers. He sang me songs. And he was writing a book about me called My Princess. He finished a chapter. I don't know that he ever got any further. But it doesn't get much more romantic than that. I just thought this was it. I know what I want. But it wasn't quite picture perfect. There was a dark side. This man was also very forceful, very touchy-feely, and constantly pushing me to be more and more physical. Well, remind you, I haven't dated before. I didn't have those boundaries, didn't have those experiences. I didn't have any of that, but I also knew it was wrong, so, you know, it was something that I wouldn't let him do. I also learned a little bit later that he, even though he's a Christian, going to this Bible college, he would leave and go up to L.A. to topless bars with his daddy's credit card. So much so that later on, we would drive down the freeway and see those nasty billboards with those women on them, and he would proceed to tell me the names of those women and those life stories of those women. He knew them so well. But I stayed with him because I thought, "This is okay. This is what I want. I know what's best. This is my plan, and I thought this was still the best thing for me." After 3 months, he proposed. It was a whirlwind. And I really think he proposed because he figured that was the only way he was going to be able to sleep with me. He didn't give me a ring. he couldn't afford it. I bought myself some cheap costumeral jewelry and ring. Now, my friends at Viola had warned me. They didn't like him at all. They actually had a nickname for him. They called him Mr. Slick. So they had a lot more insight than I did. I was completely, rose-colored glasses, I was completely blind and didn't see a thing. Well, my parents met him at the end of the semester, and they did not like him. They were devastated that Piero was engaged to this man, and they just could tell that this was not a good man. Obviously, I never told anybody any of this, the dark side that I knew about him. During my sophomore year, I had gone home that summer with my parents, and he lived in Illinois. He had been home as well. I spent that summer defending him to my parents and defending my parents to him because I loved both of them very, very much. And it was a very devastating summer. But I came back to school my sophomore year, completely drained of me. And finally I gave in and I slept with him. And I knew that that was wrong. And so the next morning, when we got back on campus, I had to tell somebody. I didn't want to tell anybody close to me, my roommates or anything, but I had another friend. And I told him, another gentleman. And we had talked and everything. And through a series of events, I guess I could go ahead and tell you that story. He's a black belt karate, but this man came and saw me talking to him and came by and actually called him a whore. And I was devastated. I just ran off and started crying. Well, this man actually went after me, but the other gentleman that I had shared with stepped in the way and said, no, you need to leave her alone, give her space. And they almost got to fight. Well, because this man is a black belt, it was his duty to report this to campus security because he could get in a lot of trouble. And so he reported it, and of course campus security wanted to know why they were going to fight. And so through this whole thing, Viola found out that we'd slept together. Fun, right? Viola never sought to kick me out. And for those of you that don't know, Viola University is a Christian college. They never sought to kick me out, but they did seek to kick this man out. And the whole time, they blamed this man for what happened. That I was duped. Well, I didn't like that at all, because I'm like, I was full party of it, I knew what I was doing, give me some blame here, I'm giving myself an F, I want some blame. So I was very angry. Viola was great, they formed like these prayer cells, I had like the chaplain and vice president people in this prayer group praying for me, which was crazy. I mean, there's thousands of students at that school, they were all praying for me. But I didn't have none of it. I was very angry. And finally, through much coercion through this man, I decided I was leaving Viola. And I decided that night, the next morning, I did the paperwork, and I left. I packed up my things, and I left. I left my poor roommate to tell my parents, because I didn't tell them. When they called, she had to get them the news. She had no idea where I went. And I took off with this man. I hated Viola, I didn't want to ever see it again. And I thought I was doing what was right. And so we lived for the next 6 months from motel to motel. Went up to Oregon or up to Washington at one point, came back down to California. We were all over the place. And he was very good at isolating me from everybody. And he was my world, and there was just nothing I could do. I was like, well, this is it. I can still make this work. And I made plans after plans. Every time we moved, I said, okay, this is how we can get out of this. This is how, you know, I can get this job. And I was making all these plans, but every time, the plan would last for like a week, and it was gone. Finally, he was like, okay, quit. No more plans. God never left me in this time, even though I left him. Obviously, I wasn't seeking God through any. He continued to seek after me just through little things. Obviously, through my own conscience, because I knew what I was doing was my friends with Viola, he even used them. And the most special thing they did one day, they bought groceries and they brought them to the hotel we were staying at and did the whole ding-dong ditch thing. So, and I just opened the door and found a bag of groceries, and the most in the bag was a bottle of shampoo. And I couldn't afford shampoo. I couldn't wash my hair. I was so touched. I mean, the food was great, but to have shampoo, I was like, oh my gosh, thank you. And that was God's just way of saying, come on, come back. When I went back to my Viola to pick up my last check, when my loan came through, and that money was still entitled to me because I had dropped out, God even used, in a very forceful way, the women in accounting to try to get my attention and say, don't do this. They normally you just be at the counter talking to the ladies, but they actually took me back to a cubicle and they blocked me in the cubicle and they begged me, do not do this. They offered an alternative, another woman who had a room house and said, come live there, don't do this. And I would have none of it. I was like, I know what I'm doing. And so I just continued down my stubborn path, but the Lord was there. Now, mind you, this whole time, my parents have no idea where I am. But I'm not that horrible of a child, because I did call them, and I wanted them to know that I was okay. So I called them on a weekly basis. I just wouldn't tell them where I was, because I knew if I told them, they would be out the instant. They'd be out against my will, anything. They would take it. You guys know that as moms, that you would do that. But those 6 months, as I'm sure you girls can imagine, as I look back, and as you can tell now, the things that man put me through, the areas, the motels we lived in, and the places we could afford were very, very bad neighborhoods. And it's amazing looking back at God's protection. Now remember, I was engaged to this man. Well, there was one night that he told me, you know what? I'm not going to marry you. You are not ready to marry. I don't know if he was trying to be bold or because he'd already gotten what he wanted. There was no point. I don't know what was his thing. But shortly thereafter, he rolled over and went to sleep. I was devastated, to say the least, and so depressed that I went looking around the hotel room to find anything to end my life. And now there's passing thoughts that come in your mind every once in a while for suicide, because I was serious. If I found anything in that room that was sharp, I wouldn't be here today. I wanted to hurt him so badly. I wanted him to find me in the bathtub, dead, the next morning, because I wanted him to hurt. Now, obviously, he wouldn't have cared, but that was just my family thinking. But the Lord, even then, was there. And he allowed me to come across the Gideon Bible. And so I sat in the bathroom on the floor reading the book of Psalms until I fell asleep. And so even then the Lord met me and rescued me. And really, like I said, he never left me in that time. And he knew that he had something better for me. Finally, I came to my senses, and I did call my parents, and just like I said, they were out within a day, took all my stuff, and we went back to Colorado. And I thought, okay, this is it. I'm going to make a life for myself in Colorado, and this is just what I've done. I still hated Viola. I still had bitterness there, and that's where I would never go back. And through some amazing turn of events, for those of you who don't, computer programmer, and I love computers, that's what I've always done. I had a job in a general store in a very small town, and happened to bump into somebody, and they had some weird company name, asked them what it stood for, and so they went into like what they did, and there was like computer type of stuff. I said, oh, is that more difficult than programming? And they went, oh, you work in computers? And offered me a job, like that. It was amazing. I mean, it's only God. So I had a computer job there in Colorado. I got my own apartment, and I was setting up my life, and things were going well. But about a year, I think it was about a year and a half after I dropped out of Biola, I just woke up one day and said, I think I want to go back. I called my mom. Mom, I'm going to go back to school. Of course, she's like, what? I think she's giving up on trying to understand me at this point. And within 2 weeks, I was back at Biola and had started back. Now, even that is the movement of God. Now, again, I'm jumping ahead of my notes because sharing the story, I want to tell you the whole thing, but I want to share the way that I prepared it. The Lord, during that whole time that I was in rebellion, that whole time that I was in the situation I was, He was protecting me. Okay? I never got pregnant. Knowing the type of man this was, I never got any venereal disease. It was a miracle in and of itself. The hotels, the motels we were staying in, the one we stayed in the longest was the one that a lot of prostitutes lived in. The room right next door to me was broken into by the cops for a drug bust. Woke up morning and had that deadbolt over it, so because they were still waiting for another guy to come back. That's the type of places that I was in. Walking down the street, dressed in just t-shirt and jeans. I mean, nothing provocative or anything. I have guys pull over on the side of the street and say, excuse me, are you working? Well, when I first heard that, I was like, what? I'm not wearing my uniform because I'm working at a fast food restaurant. I was very naive. But then it occurred to me what he was talking about. And I'm like, no. And I went as far down the sidewalk as I could. But that happened over and over. And then there was the matter of going home and feeling like a prostitute. And feeling like, the only problem is I wasn't getting any money, I was actually paying for it. Because he wasn't working, or he was off and on. So I was paying to be treated this way. And I knew that was wrong. And there was times where I would even say that he raped me. So God protected me from all of those things. And brought me, said, to the place in Colorado, and brought me back to Biola finally. I knew, through the whole time I thought that I knew what was best, that my plans were best. But luckily, I didn't have to deal with the consequences Sarah did. And she didn't have to deal with Hagar, who now had a child and was very prideful about it. And it's this new child, Ishmael, because of her actions. Luckily, God had spared me. But pursuing your own plans, they might sound great, and you might have the great offer and the great plan in mind, it'll go well for a bit, but it never turns out well if God's not in it. Well, going back to Biola, even that sudden change of heart, I was never seeking the Lord on what I was supposed to do. That didn't cross my mind. I just woke up one day and said, oh, I'm going to go back. Even that, the Lord was working, because that same semester is the semester my husband transferred to Biola. And the Lord was preparing for the two of us to meet. He grew up in California in a small town as well. He has no idea how he got the application to Biola. He never sought after that, but he filled it out. What's even funnier is there was only two schools I actually applied to back when I graduated from high school. And I was accepted to both. Those were the only two applications he filled out. So one way or another, God in his perfect plan was going to get us together. Now, at this time, after all that had happened, I had no desire for family, no desire. That was so far from my mind. I met Bernal, my husband, halfway through the semester. And I was not swept off my feet. I actually thought he was a bit of a geek. So I felt a little sorry for him, and so I went and talked to him. But, you know, we became great friends. And ran around, we were a similar major. He used to be a computer science major, and he had just switched to a Bible major. It was a whole story in and of itself and how God did that. I was a Bible major and a computer science major, so he was like in all my classes. He was both sides of me, but we were just friends and good friends. And we shared stuff. Like, he knew stuff about me that I wouldn't even tell you guys. Like, he knew this whole story back then. But then my heart started to change, and I started looking at different. Started to wonder, could it be more? You know, can this? I don't know what I'm feeling. And long story short, we actually ended up dating, and we ended up with just that storybook romance that you dream of as a little girl. He was so protective of me, so careful, and as a Christian man should. He was a very gentle, he is very romantic and took very good care of me. The contrast, I think he's been going crazy the last month or so as I prepare for this message because I had to relive all that I'd went through before. But I just go to him and say, honey, you are so wonderful because that contrast is amazing. It's black and white, the difference between what I thought I wanted and what God had for me. It was amazing. And I thank God that he finally got my attention. Well, we're finally married. And I believe we dated for about 2 years. I think we knew each other for 3 years. We got married, moved into a little one-bedroom apartment. I had one semester left at Biola, finished school. He started Talbot Seminary to get his master's degree. We knew that we wanted children, and but not right away because we knew he was in school and things. So we had a certain list of things that we wanted to happen before we had kids. We wanted a house because we knew the apartment, this little dinky box, would not be big enough for a family. I knew that when I had a child, I didn't want to work anymore. It was also a matter of health. See, after these events that happened with this other man, my period started becoming irregular. Things weren't normal. Understandably, it was a very stressful time, and that continued. In fact, at the beginning of our marriage, I think for like 2 years, I never had a period. Now, you can't have kids if you don't have that going on. So I started reading it up and self-diagnosed myself with a thing called PCOS. And I was going to look it up to see what that stood for. It just basically means there's cysts on your ovaries and the eggs don't drop and do what they're supposed to do and hormones are all messed up. The doctor verified that that was in fact what I had. So also in the plan of wanting to have children, we went about trying to seek to get my health restored. So we set about these plans, and first we started with the financial. Yes, the health was important, and I'll get to that, but we started with the financial, because like many credit cards, oh my gosh, like many college students, we had lots of credit cards. They just kind of throw them at you when you're in college, and we didn't know any better. So when we were married, we had 8 credit cards between the two of us, all of them completely maxed. So within the next 8 years, we put together a budget and slowly paid off all 8 of those credit cards because we knew that if we wanted to buy a house, we needed a credit score, all that stuff, yes, no. But we knew that we needed it all fixed before we could move on and try to get a house. Also, I went on the internet and found this site that treated PCOS with kind of vitamins, exercise, and this plan, and I started going on those. On these vitamins that are supposed to restore your body's natural balance, restore your hormones, go to the root of what actually caused the PCOS, which was more hope than what the doctors had given me. The doctors had told me, oh, don't worry, when you want to get pregnant, we'll just give you a fertility drug and make you ovulate. I'm like, okay, that's where octuplets come from. I don't want to do that, you know? I want you to fix my body, because if my hormones are messed up, I want to make sure I can carry a child. You know, sure, maybe you can get me pregnant, but can I hold the child? Can I be able to carry it full term? So I didn't like the doctor's answer. And frankly, after they told me that, I stopped going to doctors. I hadn't been to a doctor in 2 years. Back in the feds. We saved a down payment, and about the time we finally got the down payment that we thought we needed for a house, the housing market crashed. Which is horrible for you guys, but for me it was perfect. Because that was the only way that Bernal and I could ever buy a house. And I told everybody, I said, when the housing market will stay bad until we get our house. Because I know God wants to let us on this house, and that's why he did this. Obviously, okay. Yes, he loves me, but you know, he had other things going on there as well. This year, we finally found a house. It was through a short sale process. And as you know, short sales are not short in any stretch of the word. We actually had to wait 9 months before we got our house. But this year, girls, has been, I call it my little roller coaster of blessings. It has been insane. Because we got our house, finally. I found another job because the job I had was having troubles making payroll. And, you know, kind of see the writing on the wall on that one. But I found this other job, and this other job was closer to this new house. I mean, it's 10 minutes away. And the best part is it has the promise, and actually it'll happen in like May, that I'll work from home. And then to top, and I actually went from contract employee with this place to full-time 3 weeks ago. So I have that guarantee, I have benefits now, it's amazing. Then to top it off, we went away for our anniversary, which is in January 15th. We went away, and I knew something was wrong, or something was going on in my body. I didn't know something was wrong, you know? Anyway, said, I think we need to take a home pregnancy test. Now, I did want a child, and I had taken pregnancy tests before, because, you know, you go, okay, I missed my period, I don't know, because my body's kind of funky, and you take the test, because maybe, just maybe you are. Well, they always came out negative, and that was just devastating. But this time, I took the test, and I saw it was positive. And made my husband read it, because I was like, I'm not going to tell you, you have to look at it, because I just can't. We were excited, but I refused to believe it because it had been so long. We've been married for 11 years, so it had been a long time. And I wouldn't believe it until we went to the doctor to have it confirmed. And he confirmed it by doing an ultrasound. And so I saw a little baby moving around. And you can't deny that. And so I allowed myself finally to believe it, that I'm pregnant. Why, yes, being pregnant is exciting, but why now? It's so exciting for me, like beyond anything. And how perfect God timing is. He knew the things I wanted. He allowed us to get our house. He obviously fixed my health and things so that we could get pregnant. And while I'm not going to be able to not work, because I'm not quite there financially, I'll be working from home, which is the next best thing. The Lord is so good and way more than I deserve. And it's just, that is why Lisa had asked, and even knew the topic of perfect timing. Because, well, I thought I had it all figured out and I thought I could do it. The Lord had this perfect plan for me. And once I finally said, okay, I get it. My plans are nothing. The Lord came in. I know it might sound cliche, but being in the center of God's will, it's the best thing that can happen. And that's where I feel like I am right now. God has plans for each of us, for each of our individual lives, and I feel that those plans are perfect. But he also has plans for the whole world. And even if you've studied the prophecies in the Old Testament for the Messiah, and see just how perfect God lined out when the timing was. I mean, there's people that have studied and looked at, like, the prophet Daniel, the 70 weeks, and done all the math and everything, and said, okay, exactly when the Lord was crucified was predicted way back then. That's how perfect, I mean, that God has it. And knowing that, we also have the promise that he has the perfect timing for when he's going to come back. And we can look back at the individual testimonies of what I just shared with you. Look back at the individual things that he's done in people's lives, or what he's done in the Old Testament, and see that his timing's good, and even though it's hard to wait for things that you're waiting for him, he's going to bring it about, and it'll be in the best time, in the best circumstances. And if it's something that you want that he doesn't want you to have, well, that's a whole other story. But I'm here to tell you that his timing and his plans are wonderful and so much better than anything we could do for ourselves. After, I'm going to close in prayer, but I'm going to open up and allow you guys to come up and for prayer. And I want a couple of you guys to come up and pray with ladies. If you've just been waiting for something, I feel like God, you know, that God's not hearing you, or you're getting tired of waiting. Or if, like me, you jumped ahead and tried to do things on your own, kind of fix it on your own, as we ladies are so good at, I want to pray for you. And just allow God to minister to you. You are wonderful and perfect. And so very, very good. And so very good that more than anything any of us deserve. Lord, I thank you for your faithfulness. I thank you that your plans are perfect, that your timing is perfect. And Lord, you look out for each and every one of us personally, individually, and in such a loving and careful way. Just all of my sisters here, and ask, Lord, that you would touch their heart and just give them that assurance that you are there and you've heard them. You've heard their cries, you've seen their tears, or whatever it is that's on their heart. And then, Lord, you would just help them right now. Thank you, Lord. This is what you're saying. Amen. Thank you.